This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Election Day is 2 weeks away, and when voters get to the polls, nearly a third of them will face some sort of new technology. Lever machines and punch cards are on their way out amid changes mandated after the debacle in Florida in the 2000 presidential election. Some, though, worry that the new technology creates at least the potential for problems a lot worse than dangling chads. Several candidates have told their constituents to vote by absentee ballot this year rather than risk mistakes with new touchscreen machines. Academics have exposed flaws in machine security, and primary elections over the past several months, most notably in Maryland, were plagued by a combination of glitches, mistakes, and poorly trained workers. The companies that make the new voting machines insist that they are secure and reliable. Today, a look at the changes and what we can expect to go right and wrong. Later, we'll talk with filmmaker Nolan Walker about a new documentary on Jim Jones, The People's Temple, and the Horror of Jonestown, a project that, for him, cuts very close to home. But first, changes in voting technology. We'd like to hear from voters and poll workers. Are you concerned or confident in the new technology for this election? If you used or manned a poll where new technology was used, what was your experience like? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. And we begin with Kimball Brace. He's president of Election Data Services, a nonpartisan political consulting firm, and he's kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A today. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Your organization recently released a survey on new voting technologies, and there's going to be a lot of them. This is sweeping change.
This is the largest change that we've seen ever in the history of this country. All at one time, over a third of the people will be voting on new pieces of equipment. Totally new devices from how they voted just 2 years ago.
And when we say new devices, this is not all touchscreen technology.
That's correct. I mean, a lot of jurisdictions went to optical scan devices and therefore got away from the electronic controversies that we've seen recently. And so optical scan ballots were kind of a fail-safe backup as a way of giving the voter something that he could see, having a piece of paper, which is what people were looking for, and have something there for a recount possibility.
And that's what a lot of people are concerned about, that there ought to be, you should excuse the expression, a paper trail. You could go back and recount the actual votes if you need to.
Right. And that has been the main source of the controversy on the electronic systems this year. But keep in mind that electronic systems are not totally new. There's a new version of them that are out now. But electronic systems really came into being in the late 1980s and early 1990s. We had the old large a full-screen type of a device down in Louisiana, another number of other jurisdictions. So we've had electronic systems. It's just the older models that we had before.
Now, for those of us who are unfamiliar with technology in other counties or other states or other towns in some places, because
right.
In this country, it depends on where you live as
where
to who runs the election.
That's correct. That's correct.
But an optical scan device, how does that work? You make a mark on a piece of paper?
An optical scan, I always describe it as like the SAT test that you and I took when we were in college, and filling in the oval, filling in the box, that sort of thing.
That's a conspiracy by the makers of number two pencils.
Absolutely. You got to have that number two pencil. And that was one of the problems with the early optical scans, is that it required just that kind of pencil. Now they're a little bit more flexible in terms of other types of marking capability. But the optical scans are critical that people vote them properly. You need to fill in that oval or fill in that box. Don't circle the name and think that that's going to count, because it's not. The machines are looking at just a small little portion of that ballot in order to see if you voted for Kim Brace or whoever.
Mm-hmm. And now the touch screen, if you're unfamiliar with that, that works like an ATM machine a little bit.
It is like an ATM machine. You've got names and that sort of thing in terms of what's on the computer screen. It allows you to touch it, and it marks it either by a check mark next to the candidate's name or highlights the candidate in a different color, that sort of thing. There are advantages to electronic systems. You can have multiple languages on the same device. You don't have to print up, three different types of ballots with Spanish and Vietnamese or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. They can all be on that electronic machine.
Mm-hmm. There are drawbacks, as we mentioned, no paper trail.
In a first cut kind of way, there's been a lot of improvements in terms of many of the vendors to include now a paper trail option onto it. There's also the capability with many of the electronic systems of being able to print out the ballots afterwards. Now, that is not something that a voter is verifying at that point in time, but it does provide some degree of backup capability to it.
We want listeners involved in this conversation. If you've used these new technologies, give us a call. Tell us what your experience is like. Particularly interested in hearing from poll workers, too. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Roy joins us on the line. Roy calling from Columbia, Maryland.
Yes. I've used the new machines and have studied them and of course, have a new book out called The History and Politics of Voting Technology. But
this is a promotional call.
No, it is, but I want to tell you about privacy. The subject came up very recently in an article by Michael Hill on the difference between lever machines and the newer machines. Now, if you use lever machines, you know there's a curtain behind them, and that protects the privacy of the voter. With these new machines, they are, in Maryland certainly, they are squunched together, and nobody is paying attention to how the machines are placed. And one voter can look over the shoulder of another voter and see what they're doing because there's no curtain and they're not paying attention to the requirements of privacy and state law.
Is that a reasonable concern, Kimball Brace?
It is to a certain degree. It really depends on the polling place and whether or not there is enough room in that polling place to take those booths and spread them out so that you don't have them next to each other and a privacy type of concern. So it's really a function of how the machines were set up. But I think it's going to vary in every single one of our 180 to 185,000 precincts that we have in this country.
And why was it that lever machines are being phased out?
Well, lever machines are old, gigantic gorillas, as they were called. They weigh an enormous amount. They're very expensive to move between the precincts, to truck them out of the warehouse and into the precinct. And they're old technology. The little odometer wheels on the back of them, like what we have in the car, if you're not careful with them, the little pins on those could break off. And so the odometer wheel would go 1 to 9, 1 to 9, 1 to 9, and never get to 10. And you wouldn't know that, unfortunately.
Let's bring another voice into the conversation. The recent primary elections exposed challenges that poll workers will face in 2 weeks when voters show up to use all of this new technology. Election officials have been working hard to train workers to avoid a repeat of many of the problems we saw on primary days. Paul DiGregorio is chairman of the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, and he's also with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Neil.
Now, the Election Assistance Commission has been working hard to help prepare workers for the upcoming election. 2 weeks away, are people going to be ready?
Well, Neil, we have reports from all over the country that many jurisdictions are still short poll workers. They mainly rely on volunteers, and it's about 1.5 million Americans that are needed to conduct an election, a nationwide election in this country. And they're still short poll workers in Chicago, in Salt Lake City, in Maryland, in many jurisdictions. And these are good people that do a great job to make democracy work on election day. Many jurisdictions have worked very hard to institute new training procedures. When you have new sophisticated equipment, the type that Kim just talked about, you need new sophisticated training techniques to make sure that people understand how to use this new technology. But it's not just about the technology. It's about the various rules, whether it's the Help America Vote Act requirements or state law, that these folks are required to know and to implement in a perfect way on election day. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, we see that perfection is hard to achieve.
And people are also accustomed to the way they have been doing things for many years. Change is hard.
there's no question about it. There's many jurisdictions around the country, Neil, that have been used to punch cards for 30 or 40 years, and now they're transitioning to electronic voting. And we saw in the primaries this year some problems with poll workers not knowing how to start the equipment, not knowing how to get the results off the equipment. So it's been a difficult transition. We've seen this before, though, in 2002, 2004, when Miami made transition from punch card to touchscreen machines. And I think we're going to see similar problems this year. But we at the EAC have given out $1 million in grants over the last 2 years to recruit a new generation of poll workers, and that's college students.
Mm-hmm.
We've given out these grants to many institutions, colleges, and universities across the country to get a new generation of poll workers out there to deal with the new equipment and to help make America's democracy work.
Here's an email we got from Jim in Hyattsville, Maryland. Worked as an election judge on September 12th during the primary at age 61. I was the youngest of the 10 judges at my precinct. We
yes.
were not the most computer-savvy group. While I'm rather confident there was no intentional fraud, at the end of the day, our electronic poll books were out of sync by about 20 votes. Not enough to swing an election, but still not enough to make me completely confident. Our precinct was assigned a technician who arrived late and missed the prior evening's setup meeting completely. This technician helped us, but she was not that much better trained, and toward the end of the very, very long day, she was more concerned about getting home to her baby than she was about methodically closing down each of the machines by following the many, many, many steps.
Well, I'm sure that kind of email can be received from many jurisdictions around the country. You know, this, again, is a human exercise, and election officials are working very hard to find people. I know in Chicago, they're hiring people there to be technicians for the whole day, and they're paying them $500 a day to do that. And they're having trouble even recruiting people to fill that function. It's just very important that the poll workers be trained as best they can, and that we do better recruiting in poll workers across the country to get a new generation. But there's a lot for them to know, and I always urge legislators who are thinking about changing laws to make sure they understand how it's going to impact the poll worker who has to deal with these changes.
All right. When we come back from a short break, many more of your calls, 800-989-8255, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 2 weeks before Election Day, we're talking about changes in voting technology that many of us will face at the polls come November 7th. Will high-tech machines solve the problems of earlier elections or just create new ones? We have answers to many of your voting questions, from absentee ballots to what ID to bring to the polls, at npr.org. Our guests here in the studio, Kimball Brace, president of Election Data Services, and Paul D. Gregorio, chairman of the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. Of course, you're welcome to join us. 800-989-8255, 800-989-8255. Talk email is talk@npr.org, and let's get some callers on the line. This is Joe. Joe's calling us from Tennessee.
Thank you. We've had a situation here. I'm a computer person, and I'm very familiar with the GEMS, Siebel, Central Tabulators. Neil, these systems are so insecure, it's an absolute joke. We've already got a lawsuit going in Nashville or the Shelby County area that was brought by several local candidates. They found illegal software, PC Anywhere software to move the databases around on a thumb drive, a USB thumb drive. I appreciate what Mr. DiGregorio is doing with the EAC. I'm sure he's familiar with DeForest Sorey's, his statements that he's come out with. There is no guidance with these electronic voting manufacturers. In many cases, they are literally in bed with the local election officials, and the election officials have become in a position where they're defending the machines
mm-hmm.
instead of listening to the people that are bringing up totally legitimate security concerns. I've got to tell you, I've got zero confidence, because we would never know if there's any fraud perpetrated. These are computers. It's like changing totals on a spreadsheet.
Kimball Brace, has Joe got legitimate concerns?
Well, there's a certain degree of concern, but you have to take a look at the procedures that election administrators use. There's a lot of different technologies.
Joe, let him talk, all right?
there's a lot of things that the local election administrators do. The main thing, the logic and accuracy tests that are run before the election to make sure that the systems are counting properly, that are recording votes properly. So there's a lot of different procedures. Yes, I've been out and looking at elections in more than 300 jurisdictions in the country in the last 30 years. You do see some degree of vendors providing a lot more assistance to local election administrators than you'd like to see. But local election administrators are usually strapped for cash, for dealing with all these things. After all, election administrators tend to be in the bottom of the barrel when it looks towards improvements in the system. That's one of the great things about HAVA, is that the federal government did finally come through with money.
HAVA, the Help America Vote Act.
Help America Vote Act.
Okay. Joe?
First of all, the logic and accuracy testing is no good if you've got a virus that was put on the touchscreen machine, as the Princeton study just showed you can do. The virus knows when you're doing logic and accuracy as opposed to a manual election. So what you're really pointing out, actually, Mr. DiGregorio, is the fact that...
That's Mr. Brace, but go ahead.
I'm sorry. That the computers have actually created more problems, and there is no guidance at all from Washington on this. The voting manufacturers are not required to open up their source code. We have no idea what's going on, but the issue with poll workers is just compounding the problem. We should not be using computers without paper to tabulate votes.
And he's using a lot of words that I don't understand, Kimball Brace, but that last one I do understand, and that a lot of people simply just don't trust this equipment, that it's too easy to tamper with.
That is the claim that we're hearing all around the country, and a lot of people are talking about that. But you look and you talk to election administrators, they're the ones that are dealing with these equipment day in, day out. Many of them do have access to the source code. It's not some source code that is available for everyone out there, but it is being made available for the people that totally need it for their elections process.
Here's an email we got from Linda in Yucca Valley, California. I've been a poll worker in California for 2 years. We have to go to a training session every election. They give us a 60-plus page booklet with step-by-step instructions. We have roving supervisors that come by and help with any questions in terms of the electronic voting machines and how to use them. We've not had any problems. That must be an unusual comment there, Mr. DiGregorio.
Well, maybe not that unusual, but I think that, here you see somebody in California that's pleased with the way that the system's running, and the gentleman in Tennessee who has concerns, and there's plenty of people in the country that have concerns. I mean, we certainly recognize that, people need to get engaged in this subject with their local election officials. The Election Assistance Commission has sent out a management guide to every election jurisdiction in the country to make sure they have a checkoff list to make sure these systems are secure. And we encourage them to be transparent. We encourage them to have people like your caller from Tennessee in the room when they do the testing and to ask these important questions.
Let's talk with Warner. Warner calling us from Ohio.
Yes, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
In Ohio, we are very concerned about the electronic voting. And in fact, here in Summit County, we are discussing an initiative petition drive put on our ballot that in our county we have paper voting because of the concerns with these machines. Additionally, I think that paper voting is necessary to restore integrity to our process. People simply do not trust what's happening with these electronics.
And Kimball Brace?
Well, there is one thing that also needs to be said about paper. Most of the studies have shown that a paper ballot is more apt to be voted incorrectly than an electronic system. And it's one concern that we've had for a long time, that people, the American public has a marvelous way of fouling up their ballots in the most unlikely ways. Election administrators have seen this all across the country. So the key for all of this kind of voting is proper training, making sure that the voters know how to vote. And that's one key responsibility for voters, particularly those that are going to be voting absentee. Because the thing that we've seen in studies after studies is that absentees and where ballots are sent to a central counting system have five times the error rates that precinct counts do.
And Paul DiGregorio, there are some groups of voters for whom electronic voting poses actual advantages.
There's no question about it, Neil. Not just your average voter who, in touchscreen voting, can make the font larger or choose the language that they want to vote in, but certainly people who have a disability will be empowered this year, really for the first time throughout the nation, because the Help America Vote Act mandates this year that people with disabilities should have the ability to vote in privately and independently for the very first time. And I witnessed this across the country in visiting 10 primaries, and I've seen people cry after they voted for the very first time in private. And this is a new empowerment. This is something that's, you know, a really good benefit for the people of our nation.
Warner, despite all of that, I suspect you're not convinced.
Absolutely not. I think that it's false to say that paper ballots create errors. Paper ballots, it's a design issue. If they are designed properly, they are more secure and they are more accurate than any other form of voting. And I think that bears itself out. We see that in other countries. We have seen huge errors in the electronic equipment here mm-hmm. in Ohio. And there are a lot of concerns about flipped votes. We've had testimony, taken public testimony in Cuyahoga County. There are also concerns in Ohio in that we have a law that allows observation of the tally. And you cannot observe the electronic blips. It's that simple. You can observe paper ballots being counted. And we want to see that in this state.
Warner, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
And you can cite, Mr. Brace, all the studies you want. You can point to all of the, you know, evidence that has been accumulated. People are incredibly suspicious of this technology because they can't see it, they can't touch it, and they fear that it's being tampered with both by mistake and by design.
Yes, that is the major concern that a lot of people have. They need to be involved. They need to be involved with their local election administrator to be down there, as Paul was saying, and watch the logic and accuracy test, to be there firsthand to test out these devices. As the Election Assistance Commission has said, there's a lot of need for people to be involved in this process, more than just being rabble-rousers and bomb-throwers or whatever the case may be, but to be actually...
More likely lawsuit filers.
Lawsuit filers or whatever, but to be a poll worker, to go in there and work the operation on Election Day to really see what goes on. There's a lot of things... I've been a poll worker. There's a lot of things that people just don't realize the magnitude of everything that takes place on Election Day.
Paul DiGregorio, we wanted to thank you for coming in today. We appreciate your time. Paul DiGregorio is chairman of the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, and he was kind enough to be with us here in Studio 3A. Although the switch to more advanced voting technologies is unusual for its scope and speed, this is not the first time the nation has experienced growing pains with how it records the vote. Joining us to give some history on the changing technology of voting is Douglas Jones, Associate Professor of Computer Science at the University of Iowa and former member of the Iowa Board of Examiners for Voting Machines and Electronic Voting Systems. He's with us today from the studios of member station WSUI in Iowa City. Nice to have you with us today.
Well, hello.
There are a lot of fears, as we mentioned, about switching to touchscreens this year, but we have been here before. Tell us about the lead-up to the switch to lever machines back in the late 19th century.
Well, let me start by reading a media report and let you guess when it was written. This takes about a minute. The arrival of voting machines in America's polling places has not been greeted with universal enthusiasm, especially voting machines that leave no tangible record of the voter's intention. Among the new devices, supporters are advocates for the disabled, who are more likely to have their votes counted correctly when the machines are used. Because the new machines produce no paper printout, they keep ballots out of the hands of local and highly partisan election commissioners and local judges, who are known to excel at a variety of recount games. In response, the chairman of the Election Commission in the state's largest city voiced concerns about the technology, pointing out that the machines record votes directly in a way the voter is unable to verify. He insisted that if machines are used, they should print a copy of the voter's ballot so that it can be reviewed by the people, the candidates, and the courts when objections are made. Democrats charged that some of the devices have been programmed to deliver two Republican votes for every one that was actually cast. A nationally known expert on election security, meanwhile, provided public demonstration of the ease with which voters could sabotage the machines to alter vote counts. So when was that written?
I'm guessing 1876.
It's from 1925.
Okay.
And it's describing the controversy over the adoption of mechanical voting machines in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, this all started in the mid-1870s. Rutherford Hayes and Samuel Tilden had—
Which is why I mentioned it, yeah.
Yep.
Yes. That election was as controversial as the election of 2000. The electoral vote went one way. The popular vote went the other way. In the same decade, Boss Tweed's Tammany Hall organization was exposed to have been incredibly fraudulent in their conduct of elections. And
all with paper ballots.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
But not with paper ballots the way we know them today. These were paper ballots printed by political parties and distributed outside the polling place to voters. But almost immediately in the wake of this controversy, and even as the controversy was hitting the press, inventors began to come forward with all kinds of neat new ideas: improved paper ballots, mechanical voting machines. And the inventors were clearly motivated by political reform, writing things like, "It's well understood by those who have given the subject study that the system of open balloting now in use in most of the United States has opened a serious objection through the liability that the will of the people may be defeated by fraud and bribery. So serious has this evil become, and so great the danger of corruption of the ballot, as to lead to much discussion of the subject and a universal demand for the passage of laws to ensure the purity of the ballot."
Hmm.
Now, the interesting thing is that's from a patent issued in 1889. You don't often get political reformist rhetoric in patent applications. They're usually as dry as bones.
Mm. We're talking about new voting technology, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Now, it turns out from time to time that fears about rigging lever machines may have been justified.
Oh, yes. I think that the reformists pushing for mechanical voting in the 19th century, they were right that paper ballot elections, as they had been traditionally conducted, were seriously flawed and were subject to massive rigging in some counties. There are well-documented reports of 30 or 40% of the ballots being counted being fraudulent in some counties.
Mm-hmm.
And two threads of reform emerged simultaneously. One thread pushed for mechanical voting because you can trust machines when you can't trust people. The other thread pushed for improved procedures and policies that allowed you to conduct a trustworthy election on paper. In a way, both threads of reform won, because when, for example, New York finally went from paper to mechanical machines, the major election upheavals that people expected were they hoped that the Democratic machine would be thrown out and the Republicans would be swept into office by the first honest election ever. That didn't happen. Things were pretty much the same, which is to say that the advocates of reformed paper balloting had done a pretty good job of reforming the counting process on paper, and
mm-hmm.
the machines weren't that different.
It also suggests that no matter what the technology, nothing is foolproof.
That's right.
That's right.
It turns out that the machines, while they were resisted incredibly by the political machines in the various states that had strong political machines, the mechanical voting machines, eventually people figured out how to rig them, typically rigging the straight party lever to cut out candidates who the local organization didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, they replaced the risk of manipulation at the precinct by corrupt election workers at the very local level with a risk of manipulation by people in the county building, typically the technician who was charged with programming the machine for the election and setting things up.
Well, let's see if we can squeeze one more phone call in. I'm afraid we're running
yes.
out of time. So, Mark in Charleston, South Carolina, if you could make it quick.
Yes. Are the machines individually pieces, or they interface with one another?
The voting machines today?
Yeah. Are they separate, or they interface with one another when they can tally up the votes?
Kimball Brace.
They're usually separate. On election night, in particular, like electronic systems, they may be daisy-chained together in the precinct, but they're not daisy-chained back to the central office, that sort of thing. The cards from the machines are taken out and either physically taken back to the county courthouse or transmitted electronically, but in a separate device that
mm-hmm.
way.
Does that answer your question, Mark?
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thanks very much. And I guess the concern there is, again, rigging, but this time by hacking. And as we're hearing from Douglas Jones, this is not a new concern.
It's not a new concern, but keep in mind that what Doug was talking about, it took many, many years for things to change. We're seeing so much change going on immediately right now. I mean, the Help America Vote Act basically empowered everything to happen within a short six-year time period.
Going to be a busy couple of weeks for you.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much for being with us. Kimball Brace, president of the Electronic Data Services. He was with us here in Studio 3A. Douglas Jones, thank you for your time as well. Douglas Jones, Associate Professor of Computer Science at the University of Iowa, with us from member station WSUI in Iowa City. When we come back, the life and death of Jonestown. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.